be all like uncool, a very Bravo podcast. I'm Elizabeth, and I'm joined by my lovely friend and co-host, Alex Morand. Hello, Alex.
I like making my own podcasts. I find that an aphrodisiac.
How are you doing, Alex?
Great. I think we should all start every episode with a tagline. What do you say?
Oh, gosh. I think mine would just be, hi, I'm Elizabeth. I've watched The Vow for the last week, and I'm not sure if I really feel bad for anybody.
Can I change my tagline?
Yes.
Hi, I'm Alex. My friend Elizabeth made me watch The Vow, and I watched 5 episodes and can't do it anymore.
I very quickly became a Keith sympathizer. Like episode 1, I was into it. I was like, yeah, take him down. And by the end, arrest Mark.
And hey, I mean, that's how bad the show is. It's causing you to have sympathy for an ostensibly
really
horrible person.
It's so weird. Sarah is showing off her brand. She's so into it still. Nippy in the back looking so sad.
My thing is, it's too much time spent with people that are being presented constantly as normal people. They keep stressing that. We're watching these supposed normal people.
Just like you.
How crazy it is that they got sucked into this. And they're the furthest thing from normal I've ever seen in my life.
We're also joined by my lovely sister and our other co-host, Miss Julia Baker. Hi, Julia.
Hello, Elizabeth and Alex.
Julia also watched The Vow.
I did, and my tagline is, if Keith had just slept with Sarah, she would have never left NXIVM. And we wouldn't have ever had to watch The Vow.
You don't think Bonnie and Mark would have...
I feel bad for Bonnie. No one else.
I feel like if Sarah hadn't decided to leave with Keith or with Mark would have never left. He would have stayed with Sarah. No. And if Keith had slept with Mark, he would have never left NXIVM.
That's what this is all about.
It's all about Keith and where he did and didn't stick his dick. And I don't understand because he didn't seem to be like... He got around. So the people he chose not to sleep with, I find Sarah's hot. She's gorgeous. Why?
This is a show about scorned
cult members.
It's people that never got with him.
Yeah. They stayed to that volleyball court till 4 a.m. and never got any nookie. No.
Wow. A show about the rejects.
The rejects.
The volleyball wreck. Yeah.
That is how I'm viewing.
Wow. More incentive for me not to watch this show anymore.
How was your week, Julia?
Oh, my week? Well, I started a boot camp to try to get my COVID self a little bit tighter. But this was mostly inspired by...
Keith's volleyball tournaments.
It's mostly inspired by the fact that every year I go to my lady doctor appointment and she compliments my abs. But I was really worried in this year of 2020, another horrible thing that could happen to me was I would not receive my ab compliment from Dr. Ko, my amazing gynecologist.
How does she say it? Is she like shocked every time or is it like a given? She's like,
oh, amazing ab muscles.
Gives him a little pinch as she says it.
Very complimentary. Wow. Yeah. And... because I knew my gynecologist appointment was on Thursday, I signed up for Boot Camp Aussie on Sunday and got a good solid 5 days in before I had to the gyno. And guess who got her compliment?
That's all it takes to get great abs?
Me, 5 days of Boot Camp Aussie. All I
what
needed.
What is Natalie doing over there?
Follow her on Instagram.
Great person. Follow her on Instagram.
She got my compliment for me in less than a week.
Well, I had something kind of ominous happen this weekend. My boyfriend is moving in with me officially. And
hell yeah.
Yeah. So so I'm doing laundry and our first load of laundry with him living here. There's just black all over it because in the dryer was a pen. So my white sheets are officially ruined. I don't know if this is like a foreshadowing ominous sign. I'm going to take it. I'm not sure. I don't know what to make of it.
Wow. He's going to retract the 5-star rating he gave this podcast last
week. Alex, besides watching The Vow, what were you up to this week?
more along the lines of my new lifestyle of quitting things and not accepting new things, which has kind of been my big 2020 stance, is just leaving everything behind and not doing anything new. So the guy who delivered me, his name is Dr. Ed.
Wow, another gynecologist.
From a
full circle.
Wait, you're still in contact with him?
He's a family friend.
Okay.
I guess he's always had this hidden talent as a screenwriter. So he sold a pilot to Terrence Howard, who formerly retired actor. He recently retired to work on his math teriology, but he read this script that Dr. Ed wrote and was like, I gotta do this. This is good stuff. So the pilot got picked up, and Dr. Ed asked if I wanted to be like an assistant on it for like 8 months in Mississippi. And I said, hard pass. So that just shows like how far I'm willing to go with my new yes to no.
Is that a thing? I have a question. Were your parents friends with him before they chose him?
He's friends with my aunt. Okay. I think that's how they got together.
Right.
We don't talk very much. Okay. Me and Dr.
So, like,
Ed.
Does he keep track of like all of the babies? Do you think he has like an album of all of you?
I think he's offered all of us this meeting.
It's going down the list.
Who wants Mississippi?
So next week we are blessed with a brand new season of The OC. And this week we refreshed ourselves by watching a couple trailers. What were your guys' takeaways, Alex?
I haven't watched very much of OC. Mm-hmm. I've only seen some of season one, and none of these people are familiar. I think I saw a little bit of like a couple seasons ago, so I know about Shannon because she was the one that like it focused on in the episodes I saw, and it looks like this season's gonna be focused on her again. Am I picking up correctly that she's kind of like the star in the show, so to speak?
She's definitely like the
source of drama.
She's definitely the matriarch of the show right now.
Okay.
She's kind of the last woman standing from, like, the golden age of OC.
When did she join? I don't care if I don't know if I care to know any of these people, to be honest. But we'll see.
They all look exactly the same to me. Do they look the same to you? Like, their lips are all the same. Their jawbones are all the same. They just look so, like, plastic surgery. I'm having a really hard time telling them apart.
They look like the OC. They represent their region well. And I really respect them.
Very true. That's a really good point.
Yeah, I like that.
Also,
too.
When you guys were watching those previews, did anybody else get like early 2010s reality TV vibes? Like, I was getting Jersey Shore.
Back when we had a big pandemic during 2010.
Back when we had a big pandemic 2010, yes. But like, I don't know, the editing, the way that they were fighting with each other, it just didn't have the same feel as, I don't know, something like Roni or Beverly Hills or Potomac. Like, it didn't feel like it fit in with the other cities as well.
It looked like all the drama was coming from Shannon, you know? I didn't feel like it was much of an ensemble show from the trailer that I saw.
Maybe that's why. Is Shannon the villain? I'm also like Alex, I really don't know very much about OC.
I watched a few episodes last year.
Okay.
So I saw like the Tea Party episode a lot. A couple of their OGs like Vicky and Tamara were both fired. So this is like a fresh start season. So that's interesting. I did like a few of their taglines. Emily, who I thought last season didn't bring much, had my favorite tagline, which was life's full of beautiful curves and so am I.
I did like
which I thought was a really like body positive, cute way to go into this. And then Shannon, who's recently divorced from her husband, David Bedore. They were married for 19 years from 2000 to 2019, had like, honestly, I think it played. I liked her tagline. I closed the old Bedore and opened a new
one. Okay, I was really confused. Now I'm on board.
I loved it.
I wrote that in that one.
I thought she did great. Elizabeth Vargas is our new cast member.
Yeah, my favorite tagline. Her tagline was...
Your favorite name as well.
I earn my money the old-fashioned way, marrying it and then making more. And I like that tagline because I feel like that kind of irks me.
She took notes from Ramona.
She took notes from Ramona. But that's what bothers me, especially on New York, that the women pretend that I'm a self-made woman. I'm a self-made woman. No, you're not. Like, you got your money either from your dad or your husband, and that's fine. Just say that that's how you got your money. It kills me that I feel like this season of New York especially, like, oh no, I got here on my own. I got here on my own. It's like, well, your dad had money. So I like that she's just being honest. She's being upfront with it. I really appreciated that. And also, great name.
Yeah, you just like the name.
That's, I like the so name, am I right?
You just like the name. She is almost too honest because she talks about how she and her husband, Jimmy, have an intimate relationship, but never have sex.
I didn't get that was her husband and until we had the little thing later on. I thought it was just her friend.
Who is it that says sex is their whole life?
I think, is that Kelly? I think that might be Kelly. Kelly's the one who's getting married again.
Oh, the third time.
It's her third marriage. Mm-hmm. I really like Kelly. But Kelly says in a preview, when they're discussing COVID-19, she's like, I can't get toilet paper anymore. And I was triggered by this because Elizabeth and I and Alex are from a small town, Avalon, on Catalina Island. And during COVID, we had ample toilet paper because our Vons is stocked very well. And there weren't that many people here. And people from Orange County were taking the Catalina Express over, buying toilet paper, and then taking the Catalina Express back. We had toilet paper bandits. And that's one of the worst things for me of COVID-19. And these ladies weren't smart enough
to get on
to
the boat.
Figure that out, which is sad. They didn't get on the boat.
Okay. OC people have been antagonizing Catalina from what I've been hearing. They're like the biggest non-maskers. Oh my God. Ugh. I've been poisoned by an OC resident. But they've been like the biggest non-maskers and like most like annoying visitors that are like.
They're horrible.
From what I hear.
And they're in our harbor with their Trump flags a flapping in the breeze. Did you know that boat sales are up 600%? Because of COVID?
Last time I was there, I saw a Trump flag with Trump yielding a machine gun with like a bald eagle in the back. And then I saw like another one of him as Rambo. Anyway.
All right, you guys, getting into this week's Potomac.
I feel like this is the episode that should have happened last week. Like, I've already forgotten kind of what happened last week. Just because it's such like a direct follow-up. There is the thrilling restaurant stuff, though, so never mind.
I could have had the restaurant be its own episode, and this could have been shoved into the last one.
Last week was action-packed, and this week was just one scene.
Plus therapist.
A bottle episode, Elizabeth.
A bottle episode. Alex taught me what a bottle episode was. Very exciting. Okay.
And I'm not going to teach the listeners.
When I was watching this, and Giselle brought on KB, her personal security, all I could think was,
star of the show,
Alex is gonna love this. Was I right?
Absolutely. That was I love a good Bravo side character with no backstory.
No line.
Just gets to kind of watch everything happen. Amazing. And the constant cuts to him throughout the heavy drama of that scene, I knew were for me.
Poor KB. He goes there and has to like sit on a stool and wait patiently and then open the door for Giselle as she makes a stance and leaves the room.
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah, he gets to leave early, so that's nice.
I would like to say Baby Dean was an equally good security guard to KB.
That's what I, you know, I had written in my notes Dean and KB, and I'd forgotten that was the baby's name, so I was like, what the hell was I talking about? But yeah, I guess because they were both like the just sort of hostages to that situation.
You know what? I'm going to bring a spicy take. I think Dean did more because when things started getting heated, Karen had to say, we need to calm down, Baby Dean. So if anything, Dean was more of a security than KB, who I'm sure is an excellent security.
I heard we need to calm down, KB.
There's a baby. There's a KB.
Dean should pull more weight, though, because Dean is way more expensive than KB because it costs like $1 million to raise a kid.
In one booty hole.
But KB, absolutely. I'm assuming, was less than. Yeah.
Okay.
So Dean pulled his weight. Good for Dean.
Speaking of Dean, his mama, Ashley, watching her listen to Monique's apology, being like, yes, totally, totally, yes. You see exactly how she is able to put up with Michael.
Oh, and she says, and you have said and taken ownership of the fact that it was wrong.
Monique she never is just did. She never said
loving
it.
Loving an apology, or like what she assumed was going to be an apology. She was all about the perceived apology. And we now know how she and Michael stay in their relationship.
One of my favorite Ashley moments was when, I think it's Wendy or it might have been Robin, says, but you're not even, like, you don't even have remorse. You don't even have remorse. And Ashley, in defending Monique, says, she never said she had remorse, honey. Like, Ashley, are you listening to yourself? I love Ashley. I love Ashley so much. But it's so, like, you're watching her life play out. Like, this was a metaphor for everything Ashley is going through with her husband.
I mean, you're staunchly anti-Monique, Elizabeth.
Know what? I need to take back my hard stance, because I was watching that fight and I thought, okay, you don't get to put your hands on somebody. That's a hard no. What really freaked me out about the fight was Monique's fist and how she won't let that go. That really, like, ooh, that crossed a line for me. But then, funny enough, listening to Candace talk to her therapist made me more on Monique's side. When the also, thank you, Bravo, for bringing on a real
Dr. Ken,
a real licensed therapist instead of a life coach or a radio host. Thank you for bringing on somebody who has like the credentials and the state certification. But when he
lost points with me for that Kleenex presentation. Yes, I agree.
When he says to her, like, so he's a good therapist because he can't say like you played an equal part. When he says to her, like, what part did you think? And she's like, oh, nothing. I think Candace believes that. I think she is that far down her own rabbit hole that she's like, oh no, I didn't do anything wrong. I have no idea how we got here.
I hope Dr. Kim planted some seeds by asking Candace those tough questions, and that she's going to self-reflect and become a stronger person and a better person.
Hey, that's the vibe I got. It was nice to see an actual, like, good, maybe constructive therapy session in a Bravo show.
I know.
Other than characters like Jax having like false revelations in therapy, this one actually felt like real progress was made.
Okay, Dr. Ken, sign me up. I think he's awesome. I love him. And having Dr. Wendy on set at all times is also so helpful. She and Robin came in strong.
I'm going to say my favorite Dr. Wendy line. She says to Monique, you're justifying putting your hand on Candace, and what I'm saying is that what you did was not warranted. Like, it's weird because they're all kind of saying the same thing. Like, we all hate Candace. We all want to just scream and, like, jump off a cliff every time she does something. Because Candace is nuts, right? She's crazy. We saw the flashback of Candace's most crazy moments. She's nuts. Monique kind of fed into what Candace wanted.
Monique should have listened to Michelle Obama, and when Candace went low, she should have gone high. That did not happen. And
no, instead, she just doubles down on not being remorseful whatsoever.
Totally. And then, like, has the blog presence.
Ask and you shall receive.
Yeah, like, Monique, it would be so, if she went in there and said, okay, the whole blacked out, I don't believe, because she called her husband in the car and was like, told him play by play. So that was bullshit. But if she went and said, I let somebody turn me into someone I'm not, and I recognize that it's a problem, I'm going to go speak to my pastor, because that's what she's going to do. But also, that pastor isn't a licensed anger management therapist. Like, okay, therapists aren't allowed to take on clients that they don't have the skill to use. So like, that poor pastor does not have the skills that she's going to need. Like, you can do both. You can have a therapist and your pastor. But
can we talk about those blackouts? It was like these supernatural memories of the fight that's just coming back to them throughout the episode. They're haunted by them. They just kind of come out of nowhere.
With that dramatic Bravo music. Blah, blah.
I felt like I was able to see what happened better in their flashback.
As were they. Yes.
As were they.
You know what? This episode made me like Candace less. I'm now no longer a Candace apologist. And it made me like Monique less. Like, I was kind of more on her side when I saw Candace's stuff. But if Monique just say was there, and as Lisa Miranda would say, own it. Like, if she would own it and just be like, yep, I messed up. This is what I'm going to do to change. Every would have been like, yeah, we wish we could have hit her too. But she didn't. Like, Monique shouldn't have gone and talked to them. She clearly wasn't ready to. She was so angry. Also, I'm worried about Monique's marriage. Side note.
Oh, I know.
Like, yeah. Her husband being like, it's embarrassing. And she wants him to be on her side. And he's so clearly not. Like, and then just the other things that have been said this season. Like, the weird thing when she wanted him to come to the lake house and do the barbecue, and he's like, no, I just want to get it catered. And she said, I'm just not going to deal with that now. I'm just going to go put it on the shelf. I'm like, uh-oh. But that's going to build up. That's going to be a lot of anger. And so when someone as easy to get mad at as Candace does something that obnoxious, I kind of see, it's not justified, but I see how Monique let out all of that onto Candace. This is not the end.
Well, Monique doesn't even realize what she has to apologize for. She says, apologize for what?
That's the thing. Like, and all the women agree. Candace sucks. We all can't stand her. But when you assault somebody, you make yourself the bad guy. When Candace was so clearly the bad guy up until this point. And Karen, who's sitting next to Monique, really, you know, helping Monique through it.
Beautiful, better than she's ever looked.
I know, she's looking gorgeous. Stunning with her great teased up hair. That's a good look for her.
Here's Karen's quote.
But let me be very clear, and you're my friend. You effed up. You got so angry that you blacked out. I don't know that you can fix that by yourself. These women have attacked me left and right, and there is not a time that I would put my hands on them. I am willing to stand by you, but you gotta address this. And I feel like Monique hasn't. She didn't say anything. She went to Karen's house, and what did she say?
I did like it when Robin called out Karen for being a bad moderator. That just made me laugh.
I thought it was a misguided mediation in general. I wasn't quite sure what she was gonna get out of that. I don't know. But I also thought it was funny that the drama of the big group chat somehow escalated after Giselle left with KB, when Giselle was like the main instigator of conflict within that group beforehand with her note taking. Watching her was like watching me watch these shows for this podcast. And then Monique started taking notes, and then it was like a battle of the notes. That hey, she caught her on that wine thing. Is she the one that pointed out the wine thing?
It was Robin. Robin and Olivia, the Hercule Poirot of the situation.
Which is she wins my Detective Doty Award of the Week. But that immediately.
No, Robin was like, you had red wine on your face and Candace had white in her glass. Mm. Like, Robin was on it. And
almost,
Minty,
almost
like,
completely invalidates everything, right? Even though it's just such a small thing. I was like,
all my prior stances I now have to recall.
Monique shouldn't have gone. She should have taken time for herself. She should have gone and seen somebody and said, come back with a plan. Like, she's...
Monique should have gone because I don't think her opinion of the situation will ever change. And now everyone knows.
Julia. Oof.
She had 5 days. It said 5 days later. This has been 5 days.
A whole episode has happened in between.
Yeah, there was an opening of a restaurant. A lot of stuff had happened.
Went into this week knowing that Monique, like, is there any updates on this that she does not want to film with the rest of the cast anymore?
So, yes, she only films. She does not go on group trips. I did like that she's like, don't feel like you need to pick. Just don't invite me. I did kind of like that. So Monique does get that plus. So she doesn't go on any group trips, and she films with certain people. So my guess is she's going to have alone scenes with Karen. But in that little
and Ashley.
And Ashley.
And Dean and KB. I think KB was no, pro Monique for what he saw.
I am excited in our little what you can expect. It seems like Chris, Candace's Chris, and Michael fight. Not really sure about what. But I was kind of thinking like, oh, poor Chris. Candace is like such a loose cannon. Candace's mom is clearly a loose cannon. Poor Chris. But then I saw that scene. Michael's an old man. How old is Michael? Like 50-something?
Michael is a... Well, like, I did feel really sorry for Monique that, like, how society perceives Black women as like put on her shoulders,
and then yeah, that felt these really very unfair.
Aging and grayed white men just go at it, and it's like they're just not held to the same standards of
how society perceives them. And that was the saddest part, is that immediately after that fight, they started going into like, oh, this is how we're perceived, this is how we're perceived, and now it's all gone. Like, that felt so unfair to Monique, and it's unfair in general. And then we're going to see this young white man beat up an old white man.
Are we calling Chris young?
Yeah, KB wasn't there for that, I'll tell you that much.
Not enough KB.
There's no way Michael and Chris would fight each other if KB was there.
Listen, I love KB. Giselle bringing KB, the stupidest move of all time.
It's so dramatic.
It just sets like a bad precedent for... It's immediately like, I'm about to talk to someone who could like... attack me at any time. It's just not a good attitude to bring into that discourse.
And I like Giselle, but she clearly has some bizarre judgments with Jamal. Again, I can't say this enough. The men in this show, KB excluded, are just the worst.
Absolutely.
Pastor
Well,
Jamal,
she said, like, I can't be friends with Monique because it'll, like, ruin me and the pastor's
reputation. The pastor's reputation. We don't even know how many children he has.
Yeah, the pastor doesn't need any help.
His reputation?
Yeah. Pastor Bryant doesn't need any help with his reputation.
I do have to say, having Wendy there, who professionally picks apart prepared statements on TV, that is her job, just picking at Monique's little rehearsed in the car statement was gold. It's like, oh, here's the woman with the doctorate sitting down to analyze everything you said. You're not blacked out because of this. You said this because of this. It was just so good. But then it Wendy's saying rational things, and Monique is just kind of, I don't know, putting stuff out there. It was so like emotionally driven that Wendy's beautifully like prepared logic just, it doesn't matter. Like Julia said, nothing's going to change.
And Julia, you had pointed out that they were cutting out.
They were.
Yes, Julia noticed.
Karen was saying something, like a little bit of fluff, pro-Monique fluff, and they cut Dr. Wendy's mic because her lips were moving, but no sound was coming out. I thought that was really interesting. Bravo was trying to make it about both sides. Interesting, Bravo. Interesting.
Also, everything that came out of Wendy's mouth was gold. Just pure gold. It was so good. I'm like, this is why we have Dr. Wendy on the show.
Wendy and Robin because were like a really good dynamic duo. And I felt for the first time we were near DC, like Robin brought up a lot of DC things. I liked it when Monique started holding Dean. And Robin's like, now she's kissing babies? That's some real DC shit right there. That made me laugh. And then, again, Robin just, like, getting upset at Karen for her, like, moderating, like, ability. Like, we all hate Chris Wallace. Now we all hate Karen. I don't know. I just thought it was so fun.
It was a great ep. I love a good bottle episode.
It's good. It was okay, rough, though.
Straight up.
It took a lot of energy out of me.
It was rough.
It's hard to watch Monique and you want her to be remorseful, and she just isn't. And that's good that she isn't faking it, I suppose. But I don't know. It was just tough.
We got a lot on Potomac.
The bottle episode.
All right. We're going to take a quick break, and then we'll be right back.
All right, now we're going to take a step back in time to season one of Roni to visit some historic events in episodes 4 through 6. What a joy it is to be in the early 2000s in New York City with these lovely ladies.
Yes, it isn't the hellscape from OC current season.
I have to say, if you did a side-by-side of Ramona season 12 and Ramona season 1, the only difference you would see is her nostrils. Other than that, it's the same person.
Agreed.
Ramona is remarkably consistent.
She looks better now, I would argue.
She might. I mean, her nose is a little wonky. Julia has some very strong feelings about Ramona's nose season 11.
I do. I follow the nostril progression through each season. It's getting better.
It's better. But if there's one thing that stays the same with her, it's those eyeballs.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
Perpetually popping out.
There's something. So when I was watching these historic episodes of season one, one thing jumped out at me, and it's a Ramona Luann tie-in, and that is when Ramona is out at this very bizarre hotel bar club. I don't know where they were, and these guys are coming over and kind of like negging slash flirting with her friends, and she is in a jealous rage. And then we have the juxtaposition between that and how Luann is with her younger niece, and how Luann says like, oh, I love being with, you know, my niece, she keeps me young, and how Ramona sees other women as a as competition. I feel like that perfectly sums up both of Luann and Ramona's interaction with Leah come season 12.
Oh.
Ramona is threatened by Leah as another person who is directing competition with her, where Luann acknowledges that she's younger and says like, well, Leah can kind of remind me what it's like to be young. Because I think Ramona thinks that she, as Julia said in the last episode, Ramona thinks that she's in her young, what, mid-30s prime still. Like, even when we're watching it in season one and she's mid-40s, early 40s, you can tell that she thinks of herself as a hot 25-year-old still.
Mm-hmm. She's trying to learn the dance moves of her daughter and her friends. Oh, she's really trying so to stay with it.
That was so funny when she said, I don't understand how the young people gyrate nowadays.
Like, don't move their feet.
Yeah, she's like, they don't move. They only move their, like, upper body. Well, I move my whole body. And then we got, we were treated to several scenes of her gyrations. And she's gyrating to this day. Season 12, we got some great dance moves by, like, Ramona, like, being the cheerleader for Luann at the volleyball court. Like, oh, so good. Like her or not, she is, as Bethany called her, this historic housewife season, a pomegranate martini. Because she is,
ooh, I like
sweet
that, is what
and
she's
tart. Saying. Oh, I like that. Oh, I like that. She liked that summary. But did she come up with a pomegranate martini line? No. She did the Ramona Pinot Grigio. Opportunity missed.
No. I do like on Reddit, there will be Ramona will go into different grocery stores and if you say a review, some grocery stores will put your review underneath it. And there's like five Pinot Grigios that just say, wow, great Pinot Grigio from Ramona.
She rules. She's just impulsive. She'll just like, she makes those exclamations. They're all great.
She's remarkably unself-aware. And that's what I like about her. That's what we need in a housewife.
Yeah, she freaked out on Simon when Simon took himself to girls' night.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So, yeah, before we get into that, these three episodes we watched are probably, like, the best three episodes of a Bravo show in
so
a row.
Good.
Hit after hit after hit.
I have to say, I'm sorry, Jenna, bring it back to season 12. Ramona to Simon, season one, is Ramona to Leah's sister, season 12.
Oh!
When Leah tries to bring her sister.
Detective Doty Award for Elizabeth this week.
When Ramona brings her, or when Leah brings her sister, don't remember her names, Bangs, sister Bangs to the trip and wants to, Ramona reacts just as bizarrely as she did on Simon to Girls' Night. But also,
yes, it's a bit more irrational, I think, with Leah's sister. Since, like, I think. With the Leah's sister thing, it's just so weird because it's like there's no, because it's like a girl's trip. Like there's no real rules. They're still getting to know like certain people in the group. It's not like an established group, right?
Yeah.
But with the Simon thing, it is a girl's night out.
Do you think Ramona has some kind of social anxiety to where like she has to know what she's going into? And if something throws her off, she just cannot handle?
That's probably it.
I think yes, tied to Ramona is extremely insecure. I said last episode she reminds me of a middle schooler. And so I think when Alex brings Simon, Ramona interprets that as, you brought your man. I know Mario would never come. So I think she kind of feels like that's almost an attack. But also in Ramona's defense, I hate to say that out loud, we have all had that girlfriend that brings their boyfriend on a girls' night. Like, everybody has had that friend. We're like, oh, we're going to go out in this specific group. Oh, fun. You brought Derek that none of us like
mm-hmm.
to this brunch.
Well, honestly, and Alex is just
I feel like I have been that boyfriend.
Oh, but you wore it so well. Did you grab everyone's hands to where you hurt them?
Yes, and I definitely talked over my girlfriend, didn't let her say anything.
I actually, like, this was a hard thing for me to witness / live through, is at the dinner party when Simon shows up, Alex's reaction to Ramona being so upset was, I guess not everyone has as good a marriage as I do. And insane. I was offended until I realized Alex and Simon are the only couple who have stayed married this whole time. Everyone else has gotten divorced. And
to
I was like, oh.
People like you, Julia. Yeah,
that was rough. They do have a good marriage. And that, I mean, it's hard. Yeah. It's hard to come to that realization.
Well, I mean, yeah, but they're sick. They're obsessed
You're
with
so
each other.
You're so codependent. Sick. It's disgusting.
Well, I hate what Simon says when Ramona leaves. He turns to Jill and goes, and she's your friend, is that right? Just the worst thing to say.
You know what's interesting about Alex and Simon? I love how that we started out as Ramona and it's fairly quickly turned into...
We only
want to talk about Alex and Simon.
These are the three Alex and Simon episodes.
But they don't...
They're the best of.
In the terms of they only last... In our current show, they only are in a fourth of the seasons. If that. So I think it's really interesting. And it's also the only housewife/housewife couple that I can think of that are social climbers. The rest of them pretend that they are there or are there. Where Alex and Simon say the phrase, what an excellent contact for us to have. Like every 10 seconds. This will move us very
They're confusing because then they pretend like they already are kind of like an established part of that society. They're just not, it's a nonstop contradiction with them. And then Bethany goes to their house and see
oh my God.
Like...
Oh my gosh, I love it. So she goes to their house to go to Francois' fourth birthday. And she goes, they just presented themselves as a very, very scholarly, cultured, European, world-traveled luxury hotelway. So I pictured I was walking into a palace. And then her comment was when she saw, like, the destruction and decay that is their Brooklyn townhouse. She goes, it's not about where I was. It's about where I thought I was going. Bethany is an amazing narrator through the first season of Room. Mm.
So
she does an amazing job. She's just real. She's amazingly quick and just fun to watch through every season she's in. But she really like takes us on a journey through Roni. And I do like it. And she does make, she's kind of in the middle. Her and Jill's relationship is really great. She makes a connection with Ramona when they both talk about how they were like in a hard, like kind of abusive, almost child relationship with their parents.
Yes.
You know, they both had hard relationships with their dads. And she just kind of like steers the boat through everything. And I feel
so bad for her having to have all those emotional outbursts
on camera
with Alex specifically.
Oh, I know.
It keeps happening with her around.
And every time Bethany's like, I don't get along with Alex. I don't know why I'm here. And Alex is like, I think she just feels really connected and open with me.
It's so tragic.
One of the weirdest Bethany-Alex scenes. So, like, Alex just goes through, you know, her weird talk with Jason. She meets up with Bethany. Or, sorry, she meets up with Alex at the farmer's market. And Alex is like, sometimes when you have that bad moment, you just need to talk about who's ever there. And then,
even if it's me,
you know,
she gets it.
But then, cut to Alex's surprise birthday, where Bethany gets a little too drunk. But I didn't think she was out of control. And then Alex is like, it's Simon who's like, as a friend, you just need to pull people aside. And they take her into this weird side room. Do you know how mad I would be if, like, this girl I don't even like and her weird, creepy husband are like, you're out of control.
Tell you you're too drunk?
I don't think
Bethany was out of control a bit because she was plugging her tequila brand because Alex was blindfolded when Alex went to her surprise birthday party and Bethany was there. And when Bethany's reveal of herself was, You smelt the tequila, go in the shaker. Bethany must be here.
Oh my gosh.
Like, she is like plugging. She is on this show with a mission, and she is so successful.
She's doing it so smartly, though. That's so fun. Just that line is so fun.
It's so fun. And Skinny Girl Margarita is the brand, or just the Skinny Girl brand, is what's made every single housewife aspire.
I didn't know that was Bethany's. I knew Skinny Girl before I knew what Bethany was. And I feel like every other housewife has said, hey, I'm going to use my housewife status to create a brand. Where Bethany said
this. Because Bethany did.
This is a great opportunity.
That's what makes her selling it to Luann that much more impactful, you know? Luann doesn't know. She just hears it. She sells it without even hinting that it's hers.
Sells it. This, in episode 4 is when we learn what the Skinny Girl Margarita is for the first time. Mm. And it is amazing.
My girl Luann
can't
resist.
Joy to my ears. No, she goes, I'll have one of those. And Bethany goes, I respect her for that. She liked it.
I respect her for that.
Okay, I do. I keep bringing up Leah. But in this scene, I want to say it was episode 4, when we see Luann's house for the first time, really. And the kids are in that breakfast nook. And it's just
Luann's tan house is void of design.
It's just a house.
There's nothing going for it.
It's not a roundhouse. It's just a house.
It's so confusing.
It's confusing.
It's just so bleak, and it just has like that light wood furniture in it with white walls. There's no design. I mean, it's a high price tag. Townhouse, obviously, but there's nothing like visually stimulating in that.
I feel like there's like 3 living rooms. Every time it cut to like them in like a gathering space, like in a living room, I didn't know what house we were in. Because there's like there's the breakdancing scene where we see Cyclone give a great breakdance lesson. And then later that night, he does like the breakdance for the family, and it's like a completely different room. It's so weird. Is this the Luann segment? Have we successfully transitioned into...
We are seeing Luann talk to her children and in the breakfast nook. And there's that weird shelf behind the seating. And there's like, I don't know, random papers, a bread loaf. And then like a Duke painting just leaning against the wall casually.
Oh, yeah. And not even hung up.
No, not even hung up. It's like leaning against the wall like a dorm room. And I had to stop myself and think, this is Countess Luann. We are currently in prime Countess era. This woman goes into Leah's season 12. Again, I'm bringing her up. Just adorable.
And is speechless.
House. And it's like, oh, there was no like, I don't know what she wanted. It was just so...
She hates her coffee table.
When she was asked by the producers, what did you think of her
you
apartment?
Don't
she could not react.
Where it's like, Luann, we saw your Countess house and we were not impressed. Like, all of these houses are very New York humble, where I feel like now they're kind of more... I don't know. Kind of keeping it...
Well, they're all dated now because this was like 12 years
yes,
ago.
Yes, they are also very... That's it.
I like Jill's apartment. I feel Jill has like this New York, like luxe era kind of feel to it.
Again, I'm sorry. I can't stop bringing up season 12. Well, I guess it is historic housewives. We're bringing it to now. Season 12. Jill makes a guest appearance. I want to say in like episode 7, like a random episode. And I didn't recognize her because Chiron is Luann's friend. And it was very clear that they were bringing her on as, can we bring Jill back? And I didn't even notice her. She was like an Elise. And even now, like, Jill's fun, but like, what did Jill do?
She has that, the dog, I think is what takes up the majority
the
of her plotline.
The dog licks her nostrils.
But in the current season of Roni,
her daughter called perverted.
It is perverted.
Her daughter wished the dog dead.
I like that part.
Allie said.
And then an episode later, Allie. They're like chilling. Her and the dog are like best friends, Allie and the dog.
Yeah.
It's such a made up plot line. You know, she's also a great a resource of just knowledge in general. You know, people go to her for knowledge, I think is what she said.
When Countess Luann's children have lice, she reaches out to Jill, and Jill is just honored to take that research project on and let Jill know.
And you're right. Jill introduced Alex and Luann, and they hit it off immediately.
Oh, that was so funny. Then Bethany called them talking Italian to each other, or speaking Italian, a pissing contest. Oh, that made me laugh.
Yeah, she shit talks them loudly right next to them, and they don't
see it. And they don't notice.
I love, they're talking about, like, Simon. Luann and I was talking about Simon, and Luann goes, yeah, you know, it's just so great to find soulmates. A lot of people don't find their soulmates, but you and me, we're lucky that we have them. Later in the episode, we're introduced to her niece, Nicole, who she calls her soulmate.
Oh, no!
Sorry, the Count.
Sorry, the Count. Alex de Lesseps. Oh, we learn in season one, these episodes, Luann is his fourth wife.
What? That's what? Right. I did not catch that.
That's impressive. And then I did some deep diving, and I don't know if he's had a wife since, because my deep dive wasn't very deep.
How do you follow up Luann? I mean.
And this is when we're introduced first to Luann's Money Camp IU class inspiration. She says at the dinner party, that the all girls plus Simon dinner party, that I was working on a show on the internet about manners and etiquette. All I know is that you're born with class or you're not born with it. And in my head, I thought to myself,
there's a single.
Money can't buy you class.
This, wow. This segment, the historical significance of it, people don't realize.
No. It's that great visions and ideas and singles were born.
We see the seeds of them all here.
Yes, planting the seeds.
Bethany at one point, and we can get into Bethany now.
Yes.
But Bethany says in regards to Alex's parenting, she's setting herself up for disappointment with these kids, trying to make them perfect.
Yes.
Do we know what Alex's kids are up to now?
We saw a picture of one, and I don't want to, like, go against anyone's children.
They're adults. Everybody. They did not age well.
Do it.
They did not age well.
They look exactly what you think they'd look like.
They did not inherit Alex's model physique.
Her ass?
Yeah, they don't have an ass that would be great in a Speedo.
I thought it was so interesting that Bethany's storyline in season one weirdly mirrors Tinsley's storyline. But I feel like they kind of diverge, where Tinsley goes the more I'm desperate for this family life approach, and Bethany's going
to
put
career first no matter what. And Bethany's trying to have it all.
Yeah, she's not going to say
well,
no to
her. Well, it's interesting.
Career.
Bethany in season one has so many friends, whereas now in the latest seasons of Roni, Bethany's best friend has been her driver. And Bethany went to go visit one of her friends who I thought was so harsh with her in Miami, where she goes, your eggs are getting old. It's stale. That's just a fact. And like, honestly, one, way harsh. Two, drop that friend, which is why her current friend is probably her driver. But I just feel like it's just, you're watching Bethany, who right now is 37, and she's trying really hard to try to figure out how to have a family and her career. And it's such a struggle. And it's nice to know now that she does get her one kid.
Yeah, who she has a great relationship with.
Who she has a great relationship with. And she says, I could have been married to a Larry or Jimmy or Peter or Kevin, and I could have had all the kids in the world with them, and I wouldn't be happy. I wouldn't have my career. And I think, in terms of like a Bethany ever after, though she's had a hard time with her relationship with men, she has a career and she has her one kid. And honestly, cheers to Bethany, because she's had a hard road, of which we've watched, mm-hmm. and which starts with season one with friends who say very mean, harsh, probably true things to her. But I think that she's done a great job. Congratulations, Bethany.
It's nice to keep in mind, because her plot line in episode 5, I guess, is that where she has her little trip, her excursion?
Yeah, episode 5.
Yeah, because it is set up to be like how Bethany got her groove back. Like her going out to like have fun, and then, that friend shames her into feeling like shit.
Right, and then
immediately
she goes
going
back
to Jason.
the mute man.
The guy who looks like he's responding. His whole attitude is, what the fuck did you just say? Like, he has those eyes at all times.
He's like a Disney version of Lex Luthor. Like, he's just got, like, he's a little soft looking, but he's kind of bald and he's got glazed over eyes. Like, he's a, I don't know. He's got nothing. He's bringing nothing. I'm ready for him to go.
Well, if we were going to talk about Disney, he could be like Prince Charming and Cinderella, who's one.
Also doesn't say
the whole line in his whole movie was, wait, where are you going? Prince Charming.
Hold me. And she goes, Miami.
I'm going to Miami. I might like you afterwards.
I was very confused because when I was doing my Bethany research, it says she married a man named Jason, and I was bamboozled, to say the least.
Elizabeth.
Wrong Jason.
Different Jason.
Same exact thing happened to me. I googled Bethany Jason just to see what he was up to and got this completely other, this guy that looks, I haven't gotten this far into Housewives yet. But I can't wait to meet this Jason because it seems like a lot of drama came out of this one.
Oh, yeah. Bethany Ever After Jason is not season one Jason.
No, honestly.
Bethany Ever After Jason, though he turned out to be like very creepy and horrible, is way more easy on the eyes than current
That's
Jason.
That's what I was going to say.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And
he does look like Lex Luthor, Elizabeth. You're right.
Thank you. Like a soft Lex Luthor.
Like John Cryer Lex Luthor.
Like a Pottery Barn Lex Luthor. Bethany was ranked one of the top 6 highest paid reality TV stars of 2016. So Bethany Frankel is doing fine. She has her kid, which is really all she wanted. She doesn't say she wants a partner. She says she wants like a child, which is fine. A lot of women want that. They want a child. They want a best friend like Avery, as Ramona would say. And she got it. I want Bethany to come back, though. I want Bethany season 13.
She'll be back.
I want a Bethany.
Don't you worry your little head about it.
She needs to atone for the homophobic shit she said in these early
seasons. Oh my god. All of them are guilty.
They all are guilty.
Oh my gosh, Noelle's comment about when his sister was thinking about going to private girls' school. He was like, my theory on private girls' schools is that you turn out to be a lesbian. And they and put the that on air. And this is like...
The count is like... I went to all boys' school. You think I'm gay? Huh?
and Noelle's like a young man. I was like, oh, bravo, you done Noelle.
They also, yeah, and like the camera lingers on all of them laughing at how cute that remark was. It's insane.
This is of a different age. It is truly historic. And I'm proud that we're in a current horrible political situation. I am proud at how far we have come. Like, bravo has come a long way. Bravo has come a long way, and I'm very proud of them. They, like, fire Luann Locken for being racist for Emerald Houses of Dallas last year. Like, Bravo has come. And Stassi got the boot.
Sorry,
mm-hmm, but we still have Jax Taylor.
I do!
There's room to improve.
We haven't talked about the most historic part of this last viewing, and that is opening night at the opera.
Oh, we almost didn't talk about this.
That should have been its own episode.
This moment goes down for me personally as my number one. Like, when I saw this moment, I was sold. I bought into every Bravo franchise, including the Shaws of Sunset, because of this one scene, and that is Alexis and Simon's debut opening night at the opera.
Missing the red carpet.
Such a cachet moment.
At the red carpet.
Oh, it is a delight, to say the least. So we saw Alex.
We see Alex, episode 2, shopping for her dress. She goes to St. Bart. She says, yes, this bold animal print, $10,000 dress. My student loans would be gone, Alex. Excuse you for the ugliest dress I have ever seen that didn't even make
it. Number 5 in the paper.
Number 25. Oh my gosh. It's so good.
The pure adrenaline rush from watching these two try to make it to this show. They tell us from the start, you know, traffic is bad in New York. I mean, I'm sure we've all heard that before, but
notoriously bad.
Yes. But yes, they run to the show. And of course, they want to get there before the show starts, at least, because they love opera. But they're going to miss networking. I mean, I felt like I was watching Uncut Gems again. The rush was just so intense.
And then to watch the lackluster photographers as Alex and Simon jet across the red carpet. Just so delightful. And
they get inside. They get to the bar. Simon notices Jane Fonda as if they had gotten there earlier, they would have found time to go and talk to Jane Fonda at this thing. It's also funny thinking of them networking at these events after them meeting like Jill for the first time and being nervous around Jill. Like, imagine them talking to people that they want to talk to at the Mega.
Imagine being Jane Fonda, your peak early 2000s, minding your own business. You had a great career. Now you're relaxing, having a wonderful time at the Met Gala. And greasy Simon and little skinny snaggletooth Alex are like the grudge walking towards you. Just like, oh, she doesn't want any part to do with you guys. They are just so
with a whole Bravo crew.
No, I think they're entering the situation thinking that the Bravo cameras are going to give them the confidence of approaching Jane Fonda.
Oh, that's so a level of tragedy I hadn't even considered.
Totally.
You win. That's it.
Barbara Walters was also there because she was on the list in the society pages. So, like, they just think that these cameras are going to
up their status.
Open up. Yeah, exactly.
They're going to open new opportunities. Is he Australian?
And I love it when we part with them when we leave them entering the opera. They're like, well, maybe at dinner. At dinner, that is when we will network.
We return to them
the next day, having breakfast with Francois and Co. I can't remember their younger kid's name.
Jacques Cousteau.
And Simon goes, have you seen the society pages in the New York Times? And they open it up, and Alex finds herself as number 25, a back shot of her dress. You cannot see her face, but it is okay because her name is there. And she says, certainly being photographed in the style section of the New York Times next to prominent socialites makes other people see you as approaching the same status. So I would say, open night at the opera, mission accomplished.
They're so delusional. They're insane.
I cannot peel my eyes away. I know this is historic. I know this happened several years ago. I know they're currently living down under a totally different lifestyle to save their marriage with their less than photogenic sons. But I cannot keep my eyes off them now.
We talked about the vow. Who are two perfect candidates for Nexium? Alex
from
and
the,
Simon.
From that house.
Alex
absolutely.
And Simon.
Oh, absolutely.
Who is totally perfect for Nexium.
Nexium really should
Bethany
have, like,
with her saleswoman skills might be good.
I think
she would have been the best, Sarah.
I think Bethany's too, like, level-headed.
She would not join it. She absolutely would not join it.
Yeah, Alex and Simon are, like, that perfect level of, like, narcissistic, but also self-conscious. Like, that is the
prime. Oh, I can imagine. Can you imagine them?
They'd fuck Keith.
Walking in.
Oh, they fuck Keith. They're both totally fuck Keith.
But I can totally imagine them showing up to one of those sad little conference rooms with, like, a yellow sash on and being like, tonight, we're getting our orange sash. Go.
Tonight's the night, babe.
Tonight's the night we get another stripe.
Just one little, because we got to talk about Francois a little bit, right?
Oh, yes, of course.
A great peek into Francois and his psyche is when he's being escorted out of a room by Alex. And Alex goes, all right, we're going to get some ice cream. Time for mom's ice cream. Better than store-bought. And he says, no, it's not. So whatever Alex is doing and trying to make this perfect child is just, it goes against her in every possible way. He is so opposed to everything they present to him.
They're just so desperate around him, and he can sense the desperation in it. It's so beautiful. If Bethany's narrating season one of Roni, like Francois is narrating his household, and it's just absolutely perfect.
Definitely. Kid's got a good head on his shoulders.
He does. I do have to say, Julie and I watched that episode together, and Julie's husband was in the room. And when she said, "Mommy's ice cream's better," Julia's husband went, "Ew, what's mommy's ice cream?" And the fact that you have to ask that is just like a testament about how weird Alex
is. Absolutely, yeah. That could mean something else. He's right. Stassi and Beau's wedding was delayed, but I guess they got married anyway. Other than that, nothing's much happening these days. Jax Taylor got a new phone case. And that concludes this week's edition of Miranda Pump Rules.
Beautiful, beautiful.
Beautiful. Well, I have some breaking news that's in the same region as the Vanderbilt kids are living these days, but it is a little bit north in a certain Santa Barbara. And that is, for anyone who doesn't know me, I'm a huge Anglophile and I'm a royal fanatic. And an ex-castmate of The Real Housewives of Beverly Hills, a one David Foster, formerly married to Yolanda Foster of The Real Housewives of Beverly Hills, went out with his new wife, Catherine McPhee, to dinner with Prince Harry and Duchess Meghan. And I am 100% behind the 7 degrees of separation towards anyone. It's one of my things. Like, I'm not into the fact that I'm a Gemini. I could care less. I am into 7 degrees of separation to greatness. And I feel like Yolanda and I went through Munchausen together. So I'm calling that 1 degree of separation. I am so close to Harry and Meghan right now. I can feel it in my bones.
Julia is Meghan at this point, I think.
We're practically best friends because David Foster and Catherine McPhee went to dinner with Harry and Meghan in Santa Barbara-esque this Tuesday. And I just wanted to thank everybody for just like following me on this journey. As you know, I have watched every royal
it's
wedding.
Ending here.
I feel like I've gotten as good as I could get.
Thank you for joining
like,
us.
There's more to come, Julia.
Will I get closer than David Foster having dinner with Meghan and Harry? I don't know. And I am totally, truly satisfied with this. Did I stake out Buckingham Palace when I went last time to London for like 24 hours? Yes, I did. But I feel like this is as close as I will ever be. And I would like to congratulate myself. I did not know when I watched David Foster have one of those very long song dinner parties on Beverly Hills that he would give me the passport to feeling this close to true greatness.
Cut to a year later when I'm a PA on like a nature documentary that Meghan Markle's narrating.
That gets bad reviews.
Oh my gosh.
Alec, you have to be a better passport than David Foster when you sacrifice yourself.
Another Beverly Hills news. Garcelle was asked on ET to react to Teddy Mellencamp's firing, to which she replied, "Okay."
Yes! And only better than that would have been who? But that would have been disingenuous. So I agree with her. Okay.
But our real...
I love Garcelle.
Love Garcelle. Love Garcelle. Please come back. Our real news of the week is we have a new Roni cast member. The first African-American woman to be on the Roni cast. Her name is Ebony K. Williams. She is an attorney and she's currently a co-host of a hip-hop TV show hosted on reality TV in the past. She'll be on season 13, which is in production. She quote unquote keeps it real, and she's 37 years old, which I believe is Leah's age. And
wow. She is gorgeous. I'm looking at her now. Unbelievably beautiful. On my phone.
Another contender, another African American woman, was Bershawn Shaw, who was also looked into. She's a breast cancer survivor.
Contender? They were trying to fill like a quota here?
I'm kind of not a fan of. But because we had Tinsley and Dorinda leave, we have two open spots. And Bravo had said, hey, it is kind of weird that we've had 12 seasons of strictly white people in one of the most diverse cities in the United States.
Oh, definitely. I was just making sure it wasn't like we need one black person.
They had one spot to fill, but now that Tinsley and Dorinda's gone, I think that was Tinsley's spot. Now that Dorinda's officially gone, I think this was either a contender for that spot, or maybe she'll be brought on in another sense.
As a friend of.
That's what it kind of made it sound. Either she'll be a full-on housewife, or she'll be a friend of. Her name's Bershawn Shaw. She was looked into. She's a breast cancer survivor. She's been on reality TV before, and we're not sure if she'll be a friend of or a wife, but she is being looked into at the moment. So that's my exciting running update.
All right.
Well, with those credentials, she should be at least given the same courtesy as Elise was.
Oh my God.
And be brought on as like friend of guest appearance to then slowly get pushed into
I have a question, Julia.
Pushed out.
I know. That's my question. Has any friend of become a housewife? Is that an actual transition?
Because
I feel like I've seen friend
Luann is only second to Ramona because Ramona's always been a full cast member. Luann was friend of for half of season 4 and then brought on.
But Luann was a housewife for season 1, so I don't think I'm going to count that.
Right. I don't know.
I feel like if you're friend of, you stay friend of or you get written off.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It might be a hard. Honestly, though, if I'm super excited. I didn't even know about our new Ebony Williams, and I am thrilled to get to watch a new production of Roni.
I'm very excited. I'm very excited.
I need some current content. I'm excited.
Okay. All right. I think it's time for awards.
Ooh.
Julia, would you like to go first with your award for this week?
Oh, yes. Okay. So big news in Bravo World from yesterday, Cynthia Bailey from Real Housewives of Atlanta was married.
I thought you were going to say murdered.
To her squeeze.
That big M. I was like,
married. And she had, so something really exciting for me about Cynthia Bailey's wedding, as I followed it on my Instagram, was that she had an amazing cast of Bravo celebrities show up. Tamika, who is my favorite Southern Charm New Orleans cast member, went with her husband, Barry Smith, and I loved it. And all the guests wore black and white, so they had amazing things. Some Real Housewives of Potomac ladies were there, Karen Huger and Giselle. Ooh. Went to her wedding, and that was fun. And then, of course, all the Real Houses of Atlanta were there, where Portia was amazing and beautifully dressed. But Cynthia's wedding dress was absolutely gorgeous. It had a beautiful train, but it was super revealing and kind of like akin to Britney Spears' diamond outfit from the Toxic videos. And this woman is 53 and looks incredible. We all wish to be as blessed. And yet, even with this happening, my award, which is the ultimate Grand Supreme Erica Girardi Award, goes to a cast member of The Real Housewives of Salt Lake City, who we haven't even introduced to yet, Jen Shaw, who wore a couture Biden sign gown and posted it on her Instagram.
It was beautiful.
Cynthia Bailey, sadly, on her wedding day, for me, is a runner-up.
Wow.
Because Jen Shah, I assume Salt Lake City would be akin to Orange County, where we just have to deal with a lot of Trumpers running around and just decide that we were fine with that for some weird reason. But Jen Shah dressed in a Biden signed gown and looked amazing. Cynthia also looked amazing. But the ultimate Grand Supreme Award goes to Jen Shah.
Ooh, yay.
Woo!
Wow.
I love it. All right, I'm going to...
Biden over bride.
Biden over... I mean, there's a lot at stake right now, guys. We got to give the ultimate Grand Supreme Erica Girardi Glam Award.
More accounts.
To something who I think will help us for the next 4 years. And Cynthia Bailey's marriage may make it that long, but I'm really hoping Biden does.
My award this week is the Lisa Rinna Own It, Baby Award, which I give to the whole cast of Potomac. Lisa Rinna, thank you, thank you, thank you. Lisa Rinna says own it probably every other sentence on Real Housewives of Beverly Hills, encouraging her fellow cast members to reveal their lives on TV. And I feel like no city does that like Potomac. We have seen inside therapy sessions. We have seen inside podcasting sessions. We have seen every inch of Ashley's marital issues. We have seen everything. We've heard about booty holes. We have heard about maybe sex or non-sex lives. The women of Potomac reveal all, and it is amazing. I feel like we barely talked about it last week. When we saw Karen take off her mic and cry because her husband didn't know he loved her anymore, that was such a real painful moment. And I wanted to say thank you to the women of Potomac for being so brave and owning it.
No artifice there.
No artifice there.
Great stuff.
All right, Alex, how about you?
All right. No new leads on the Detective Doty Kyle Richards case, sadly. Every day I wake up and I Google Diane French to see if there's anything new. So it's a new award this week. This week's award is the Patricia's Butler Michael Award for Passive Observer. Patricia, of course, from Southern Charm, and her Passive Observer Butler Michael, present for a lot of big showdowns between cast members. And this award goes to the aforementioned KB from this week's Potomac.
Yes.
Could you ask for a better passive observer? I couldn't.
He comes at a price tag, I'm hoping.
Yeah, I hope so.
He was paid to be a Barney guard.
But unlike Michael, he doesn't even say anything, making him like one of the better passive observers we've seen on the Bravo network. I hope the best for him. And
I hope we get to see him again, honestly. I hope we get more KB.
Truly someone who said so little meant so much to me.
He has been described on the internet as instantly iconic.
Yes.
Oh, yes. Well,
so I think Bravo, the fans are demanding more KB. And they're going to want even more of him after they find out he's an award-winning now member of the Bravo universe.
Of a truly coveted award.
That's true.
Indeed. Well, thank you so much for joining us today on the Don't Be All Like Uncool podcast. You can follow us on Instagram at Like Uncool. And we have a new episode every Monday. Until next week.